Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Random Reflections. And today, Lori and I are going to be talking about labeling. So when we apply a label to our dogs, whether or not that label is actually true, labeling our dogs will impact how we train them. One of the things that people do is they label their dog a certain way, maybe based on traits they see at home, based on traits they see when training, or maybe something that actually happened. So like a perfect example is one of my students, this literally just happened. When she works her dog and submits her videos, the dog's like super happy, super cute, super engaged, like working really nicely. And she's in my pressure class and she keeps saying, oh yeah, this pressure is a big challenge for this dog. It's super hard. And I'm watching all these videos and I'm starting to think after a week or two, like, I don't know, man, this dog looks pretty good to me. And then in a recent homework, she says, oh, you know, my dog had this really terrible experience. And after this terrible experience, like, the dog didn't even want to work, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and it's been really hard. And so after a discussion, we determined like, yeah, that happened. Yes, that affected the dog, but dog's over it. Like, you fixed it. Whatever she did, fixed it, because the dog is now perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. So I said, now you need to train the dog in front of you at this moment. This is no longer a nervous, worried dog that's reluctant to train. This is a perfectly happy dog, perfectly happy to train. And that's how you should train the dog right now.
Yeah, I think it is a common thing for people to slap those labels on dogs. And like you said, you know, it could just be like a singular one-time event that could happen that could have caused the dog to react in a certain way. And then the person could be now from that point on, it's going to be in their head. Oh, well, now that my dog is now nervous. I have a nervous dog based on what just happened. My dog is nervous. And then those labels can be really limiting. I think that's where we have to be really careful, because we put that in our own heads and it causes us subconsciously to start limiting our training, because we now have this new picture of what this dog is according to that label we slapped on them. And so now we're going to treat that dog differently, and that can affect that can cause I guess your training can be not as effective, because now you're putting limitations on the dog based on that one singular event. It can also be with a dog who has characteristics or traits, like that's just the essence of the dogs. I mean, if we could talk about like genetics, not every dog is a resilient dog. Some dogs do have those personality traits genetically factored in, that they may be a little more environmentally sensitive than other dogs. They may be a little more pressure sensitive than other dogs. So I feel that those can be inhibiting to handlers, because now you're going to be training that dog in front of you with the label slapped on its forehead, instead of challenging yourself as a trainer to I guess those little labels can, I always go back to like everybody, humans and dogs have their strengths and weaknesses. So if somebody has a weakness, are you going to treat them? Are you going to tiptoe around those weaknesses? Are you going to try to help that person overcome those weaknesses to be stronger, to do better? So I think that we have to be really careful with labels because of that.
And there is a thing, it's called confirmation bias. It's that thing where if you start thinking about white cars, are there really white cars? You're going to notice every single white car. And all of a sudden you're going to be like, oh my God, there's a lot of white cars. Well, there are no more white cars today than yesterday. You're just noticing them because that's in the forefront of your mind. So if I label my dog as nervous, well, maybe he really is. But now everything he does, I'm like, oh, see, he's nervous. Oh, see, he's nervous. Mm-hmm, well, mm-hmm. Maybe not. Like someone said the other day, oh yeah, my dog, see, that was an example of my dog being reactive. No, it wasn't. You were training in your house. somebody came by, your dog went, rah, 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 rah. Well, guess what? My dogs will do that. I don't label them reactive. They're in their yard. They guard the yard. That's their job. I'm training them. They hear somebody walk by. They hear the other dogs barking. What do they want to do? Go bark. That's not reactive. They're protecting their property. So maybe your dog is reactive, but not every situation is that dog being that or acting in that way. So I always think we should reverse the label, right? And pretty much like you said, work towards making the dog what I want it to be. So if I want my dog to be confident and my dog is genetically innately nervous, now I'm going to be looking for solutions.
Right.
I'm going to be looking for answers. I'm going to be saying, oh, my dog is nervous here. And instead of throwing my hands up in the air and going, see, my dog is nervous. Mm-hmm. Nothing I can do about it. I'm going to go, okay, what can I do in this situation to make my dog less nervous, right? What training techniques can I use? What training techniques can I employ so that I can change that around? And the truth of the matter is you can affect your dog's behavior if you're willing to be patient, if you're willing to think outside the box or to really look in, you know, everywhere you can to find a solution. You can actually take a nervous dog and make them confident, because I have done it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can take a dog that is labeled as X and you can modify that behavior to probably much further extent than you even really truly believe. It's possible, but if you don't believe it, ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think in our world of dog sports across the board with all the sports everybody does, everybody, when they're going to get a puppy, particularly for doing a sport or multiple sports, they're looking for the unicorn of all dogs, right? Like everybody wants the confident dog, the dog that's going to be fast and the dog that's going to be super smart and the dog that's not going to be environmental and doesn't care about this. Like everybody has their idea of when they're going to get puppies, like this is what they're looking for. But at the end of the day, as we all know, those unicorns are very far and few between.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky to Well, you've had one.
I got extremely lucky and I'm very aware of that.
But right.
One.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, you know, we're all going to have specific traits in our dogs. They're going to pop up, right? They're going to, like I said, like people, there's you have strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's the same for dogs. And as soon as that you recognize those and sort of embrace those instead of, like you said, throwing your hands up and be like, oh God, I got it. This dog's nervous. This dog's not going to be able to cut it. I mean, that is a thing in dog sports. We all know people wash dogs because they're not cut out to be, you know, I personally wouldn't wash a dog. I know it happens out there. But for me, like that is why I love training so much. Those challenges, like how can I make this better? How can I help this dog? How can we overcome these so we can do X, Y, and Z at the level that I want to do it at? That's my driver for training, for sure.
Yeah, and it fascinates me because people will, even sometimes when they're coming to me for help, right, they'll be like, oh, yeah, pressure. My dog can't handle pressure. They can't handle it. So every time there's pressure, I said, okay, well, let's address the pressure. Well, you're going to see let it go.
Yes.
Let's just teach your dog now to work around pressure. Like, don't cling to it desperately unless you really want that to be the dog's reality forever. Just say, okay, this is my dog's weakness. Let us improve it. Like, mm-hmm. That's it. It should be that simple. People also will, I see this a lot, where they have labeled their dog based on their prior dog. They're seeing things that are not even happening.
Yeah. True.
Like, for real, this has happened many, many times where they're telling me this is happening, and I'm looking at the video and I'm like, I don't even remotely see that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that nicely, I'm like, well, this is what I see. Like, I really don't see that. They're like, so I'm like, I'm not sure where that's kind of, and all of a sudden they'll be like, you know, I think you're right. My last dog was this way. And because of that, now you're like hypersensitive,
mm-hmm.
and everything you see that might be like that dog was, you're like, oh God, see, it is. It's that. So it really goes back to need to just look. We need to do two things. One is actually look and see the dog in front of you and what they're doing. And read their behavior through an objective lens, not a colored lens based on what other people have said about your dog, prior dogs, some, you know, thing in their genetic makeup that's, like you mentioned, like a weakness, right? Just look at the dog in front of you. Because a lot of the times they're not even doing what you think they're doing or feeling or acting in a way you think they are. And obviously that's going to interfere with training. And again, you have to say, okay, well, if my dog looks like this in this moment, why is that happening? What can I do to improve upon that? Like, that's being an objective trainer, and that's going to be the most effective and the most fair for the dog that is in front of you at this moment in time.
Yeah. 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 Because you are, you know, if you're going to struggle with those things you just mentioned, then you are going to be hitting a lot of walls in your training.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, we've seen it where people just sort of give up and they don't, you know, they say, well, I don't know what to do. This is what my dog does. This is who my dog is. My dog's not going to be able to do this.
And then you're gonna be frustrated because you're disappointed, and you're bringing that frustration in the training, which the dog feels.
Yeah.
And that damages your relationship even more. And so then it becomes more and more of a self-fulfilling prophecy because you're already walking in there like with some level of disappointment, right? Like, I have somebody, multiple dogs have a certain amount of drive and effort that they bring to the table, and now they have another dog and it's different, mm-hmm. right? And this person's like, the dog's not trying hard enough. The dog's not this, the dog's not that, the dog's not, and it's all negative labels. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, again, I'm looking at the dog and I'm like, this dog is different. Doesn't mean it's not as good as the other dogs. It's just more thoughtful. And when it's thinking, it's slower, but when it's confident, it'll get faster. And it's just confused. But constantly bringing those feelings and emotions into the training was just making the training more muddled because, again, there was this frustration and this disappointment put into the whole training session that didn't really even need to be there. Now, having said that, I'm not saying it's easy.
It's not easy. It's totally not easy. And, you know, I've had people too who've come to me with their dog. And a lot of times you'll hear people say, well, my last four dogs were nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always hear that. And I'm like, well, that's probably a good thing because that's got to be pretty fucking boring.
Right.
Just train the same dog
right?
four times
over
in a row.
And over.
And, you know, that's when you just, you know, you do need to. That's, again, going back to, you got to think outside the box. Like, that's what makes you a great, effective trainer, you know, because not every dog, no dog is the same. Even if you get four that are pretty similar and whatever characteristics, you're
and
still.
And my question is, were they really all the same?
Right.
And were they really easy? Because people have short memories. Let me tell you, when I get a puppy, the first thing I think to myself is, how do I potty train this? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
It was like 5, 6, 7 years ago since I had a puppy. I don't remember how I taught the puppy anything.
Right,
like,
right.
I forget. And the more dogs you have, the more you know what your end picture is going to look like. And then people are training dogs. They're like 8 months old, a year old, and they're like, you know, dog can't front. Oh, the dog's healing's a mess. I'm like, dude, it's a baby. Like, you forgot. Like, you're comparing it to your fully trained adult dog.
Yeah.
And you completely forgot because, and I know that because I forget. Like, I've had puppies or young dogs 2 years where I'm like, what is wrong with this dog? Why does it not know this? And then I'm like, hold your horses. Like, think back. Was your best dog at this age? What were they doing? Well, assuming I can remember, which sometimes I can't.
Right.
They weren't doing any better than this puppy is at this moment in time within a certain range, right? I mean, I feel like within a year, different dogs mature at different
places. Totally.
Learn at different paces. Our teaching is different. Everything in our life is different, right? So, but yeah, our memories are kind of selective.
They are selective. They are. And I think what also plays into this is our own expectations of what we think the dog should be doing at whatever X amount of however old they are at that time, right? Like, even going back where you're like, we forget, like, a 6-month-old isn't going to be fully trained healing. But it's also the expectation, especially if you've had successful competition dogs in whatever sport you're doing, then there's that almost that pressure we put on ourselves, right? Uh-huh. And we, like, people know we got a puppy. They're going to be watching the journey and they're going to be watching you train it. Like, there's that pressure. There's some expectations there. But at the end of the day, that dog is going to be entirely different. It's going to take whatever time it's going to take, whatever you're training it. I mean, I remember when I got Stormy. She's from some great field lines, and I brought her home, and this is after training Ever, who was pretty quick and clever and fast and speedy and picked things up pretty quick. And I remember being in my bedroom, and I'm trying to, like, lure Stormy with cookies in my hand, like, you know, just food follow in the hand, and she can't do it. Like, she's like, and I'm like, oh. My first reaction was, boy, no, like, you do that because you've got goals for the animal. You've got a purpose of why, you know, they are our pets at the end of the day. We always say that, but we also have things we want to do with them, right? We want to compete at whatever level and whatever sport. So my first thing was, oh God, but this puppy was nowhere near like Ever. She's a totally different dog with a totally different personality and a way total different learning style. Mm-hmm. So I think that really can, then that pushes us to start whacking labels on the dogs, you know?
And, you know, it's really hard to hold fast in light of those expectations, right? And especially the whole comparison is a thief of joy. Mm-hmm. Like, online, all you see is everyone's dog being a rock star.
Yeah.
You don't see them. Very few people post, like, their dog, you know, not doing so well. So then you have this perception, right, that every dog out there is perfect and they're doing phenomenal and they're showing really young and they're having all this success. And then you're sitting at home and you're like, what's wrong with me and what's wrong with my training? And yeah, I have people constantly saying to me, like, aren't you showing the dog yet? What are you doing? How old is the dog? How old? You know, oh my God, just leave me alone. Like, I don't know when the dog's going to be ready.
Yeah,
I have no idea. I'm not pushing my dog. I have to hold fast to what I believe in, the training I want to do, kind of the way I want my dog to be, like the confidence I want to put in my dog. And all of that takes time. And there's no predicting how much time that will take.
Yep.
So I just have to, you know, like, check my ego at the door, ignore what everyone else is saying because they're not walking in my shoes.
Right.
And remind myself constantly. I remember someone once said to me, you know, how come so-and-so trainer, like competitor, they're constantly winning with their dog or qualifying constantly. And like, I can't with my dog. And I'm like, I don't think that's really true. Yes, it is. The percent. It is every weekend. It is true. I'm like, I really don't think that's true. So I started tracking the other person out of curiosity. Right. And I'm like,
You're totally wrong. They're not queuing even close to every weekend, even close to that. But they're only posting when they do. And again, it's that confirmation bias. You see it and go, see every time. It's not even based on fact. Go back, look at their thread. It's not even close to every weekend.
Right.
That's what you're telling yourself. And that's hurting you. So why are you doing that? Like, stop.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Madness.
I know. Well, it is. There is that comparison thing is that really can wreak havoc with the way we interpret our own dogs in front of us when we start going down the comparison road.
Yeah, because then you're like, you push them too hard, right? And then you're frustrated when they're not doing as well as you want them to do.
Exactly.
And that's going to bleed into your training. And your dog's going to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so unfair because they have absolutely nothing to do with that.
Right.
They're trying their hardest. Just because we're kooky humans that are insecure and that are always comparing ourselves to other people and listening to other people, that's a human problem. Like, the dog should just be like, dude, chill out. Like, this has nothing to do with me.
Right. And that's exactly what happens. We take our own human insecurities, all our own problems, based on watching that freaking social media stuff. And that's what happens because, you know, and that goes back to the expectation factor too. Like, oh, we get the puppy. We want to do well. We want to win nationals. We want to do this. We want to do that. And then it might be taking a little longer with whatever characteristics you're dealing with that certain puppy, or that those pieces of training are taking a little longer because you need to break it down even more, like whatever, X, Y, and Z. And then that's when it starts to definitely impact our training. And that's where I feel like that's where you start putting limitations on things and you start, I don't want to say you're doing damage to your training, but that stuff will bleed into your training and it will affect your relationship with your dog because you have those feelings of disappointment. They're not meeting those expectations, right? Those standards that you had dreamed up of when you brought the 8-week-old puppy home, right?
Yeah, I totally, I'll go on a limb. I'll say I do think it adversely impacts your training because you're not being objective.
Right.
You're not looking at what's in front of you. You're not collecting the data. You're not analyzing it. You're operating on things that are not relevant to that moment in time, but yet they're influencing your decision making.
Right. Right.
And so I think the irony is there are so many things in training that, like shaping, but I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, that people think that people like skimp on because, you know, they're in a rush, right? So I'm going to subconsciously push my dog more because I have to catch up to Mary Jane and her puppy. And all you're doing is putting yourself further behind the eight ball. When the faster way to get your dog to progress at an optimal speed for that dog is to not put pressure on them, train them fairly, train them objectively,
mm-hmm.
train them for, you know, in accordance with where they are at that moment in time, that is the most efficient and fastest way
mm-hmm.
to train your dog and get where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I really like thinking about dogs and the the genetic components that can start to come out in, you know, personality and X, Y, and Z. I think that we tend to, you know, like you said, like that timeline comes into play a little bit, like where you feel as like the human side of it as the trainer. Well, I've put in all this time. This dog is now 3. This dog should be ready. I hear this a lot too, but we should be ready. The dog's 3, for God's sakes. The dog's going to be 6 by the time it goes in the ring. And I'm like, well, then it'll be 6. Mm-hmm. Like, it is what it is. Oh, like when you buy your puppy, even after all the work, like we were just talking about, all the work we do to research, to try to find good breeding, good lines, blah, 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 blah. things that are going to hopefully meet the criteria that we want in a puppy to do the things we want to do. It is a crapshoot. And you may get things that crop up in the puppy where that's going to affect your timeline. And you have to just be really careful, like you said, not to put that pressure on and be okay with however long it takes to prepare that dog for whatever your goals are.
Yeah. And no puppy comes with a guarantee that they're going to be ready in 3 years. Like, that's true. Not a thing.
Yep.
It's not a thing that people, they're going to be ready.
People think it's a thing. They
it's
do.
It's not a thing.
The magic
there is
number.
No 2 year, 3 year, 4 year. There is no thing. The thing is your training, right? Like the quality of your training and the dog's genetics and just other factors, right? You could be the best trainer in the world. Your dog's going to be ready when it's ready. Now, maybe some people are able to push their dogs to, you know, come out younger. But in my personal experience, every dog that I have seen, which doesn't mean every dog on the planet, because obviously I don't know all those dogs, but every dog that I have seen that was put out and started competing when I thought, in my personal opinion, that dog was too young or too immature, over the long haul, those dogs always fall apart.
Yeah,
always fall
apart. There's fallout. There's fallout.
And that, to me, it always makes me sad, but I always use it as a reminder. Like, I'm like, hey, lady, pay attention.
Right.
This is what's going to happen. If you want longevity, you need to take your time and listen to the dog. Yep. I mean, I have some clue as to what I'm doing. My dogs typically, I've never had a dog in novice. I don't know when Tyler went, so maybe I'm lying, but all my other dogs in novice, they're well into being 3 years old.
Right.
Before I show them in novice.
Right.
Like, and it's not like, oh, that's a magical time. It's like, that's just when it happens. I mean, Zest is an example. He's so insanely precocious in terms of learning that I didn't post any training videos when he was a puppy purposefully, because I felt that if I posted all the things he was doing, that it was going to be a disservice, that people were going to think their dog at that age should be able to do that and push their dogs too hard. That's how precocious he was in terms of learning. However,
right.
Emotionally, maturity-wise, he did not mature until later.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter
right.
that he had all these skills. Like, he was not emotionally and mentally mature enough to handle it.
Yep.
The stress and the challenges of the ring. Therefore, in spite of the fact that he was so precocious, I did not start showing him until, well, he was well into being three.
Right.
Because that's when I felt, you know.
That's when you felt he was ready.
And could
right.
handle it. You know?
Yeah.
So it all goes back to, and again, like, the setting of goal thing, that's just a human thing. Now, it doesn't mean don't set goals, but I don't set those timelines because timelines have never served me well. Timelines have only ever hurt my training, ever. Every time I've set a timeline and strove to achieve that, I regretted it. It mm-hmm. negatively impacted my training.
Yeah, because you it's know? Like that little TikTok clock going
yes.
on behind you, you know? And that's when you just add pressure and you're trying to beat the clock, so to speak. You don't want to
yeah.
do that.
And like, I think we all have to, again, go back to when we first started doing this, when we were naive and clueless. And
it was fun.
Like, we were like kids in a candy store. It's like, I mean, I remember all the firsts, like with like clear as day, like, oh, he's doing this. My first set of article, my first set of this, my
yeah.
first set of that, my first title, my first, you know, this one, that one, like this title, that title. Every time my dog learned a new skill, I was like, it was magical.
Yeah.
And then the only reason that magic goes away is because of our expectations.
Right, right.
You know, and if we remember that, it's really not supposed to be about a timeline. It's supposed to be about the reason you started doing this in the first place, which was to spend quality time with your dog, to have a relationship with your dog, to teach your dog to do these like super cool, fun, complex behaviors. And then somewhere along the line, you allow yourself to be disillusioned, but that's totally on us.
Totally on us, without a doubt. Yeah. So you got to watch putting labels on. You know, it's the same thing too. It'd be like if, I don't know, if you slap a label on a human being and told them that, they'd be offended.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that same thing, that like negative connotation. So mm-hmm. don't do that, because there's negative side effects to doing it. It's going to affect
things. Everyone gets highly offended if you even accidentally label someone. Everyone's up in arms, but
right.
we can label away with our dogs, you know, dogs this, that, the other thing, the other thing.
Right.
We should be equally offended. We should be like, no, it's just a dog.
Right.
That exhibits certain behavior. Okay. What can we do to
help strengthen? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
See, everybody makes things too complicated. It's not that hard.
Gosh. Yes, master.
Humans and our crazy brains.
Yep.
And the poor dogs.
The poor dogs. All right. Well, that was good. Don't label your dog.
Don't label your dog. That's it.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.